we have these old people in our congregations, beloved elders, we might call them. Some of them haven't been there for very long. They haven't been Unitarian very long because they were Anglican or they were United or they were Roman Catholic or Jewish. And we only find out during their celebration of life that they were at the forefront of medical care to HIV/AIDS men in the 1980s. They don't wear that as a badge. They know they did it. We find out that someone stood in front of the bulldozers at some land somewhere. But to the newcomer to the congregation, they're just an old person. And then sometimes those old people, they're not asked about how to do activism because they're just old people. And some of our younger folks might say, oh, activism, we should do what Greta Thunberg is doing. Well, that's one thing. I mean, we could phone Greta and see if she'll answer the phone. Or we could ask activists who are in their 20s and 30s now to talk with some of our elders who were activists in the 80s and the 90s against harvesting whales, for instance. I love that the Unitarian Church of Vancouver has a plaque in one of their meeting rooms acknowledging that Greenpeace was formed in that room because Greenpeace needed a place where they weren't going to be judged or spied on and the RCMP weren't going to be allowed in. I'm not sure if the RCMP was a factor at that point, but they were going to do this important work. They were going to stop nuclear testing in the oceans and they were going to save the whales. And so where did they do that? The Unitarians. And there are Unitarians alive who remember those days and have lessons to teach.
Welcome to UU Expressions, Love in Real Life. In this episode, we'll look more closely at two defining expressions, congregational culture and young adult culture. We'll look at how they interact and what it means for the future of UUism. There's a lot of information, so a heads up, we will be taking the next two episodes to cover everything, starting with the young adult culture as it contrasts with the traditional or older adult UU culture. We'll look at where these cultures are situated in the broader social context and what might address some of the disparity.
You know, I've been thinking about Peter Scales' interview a lot. The image of him and his youth group being 60 years old and still the youngest in his congregation is heartbreaking, especially considering it was his generation of UUs who supported the creation of the CUC's young adult program.
It is a sad image, but something that Peter shared that was heartwarming is the admiration that he has for the UU elders that he interacts with. For example, he recalled a time about 20 years ago when he moved to Victoria and noticed two UUs wearing the Order of Canada pin and met several others who were either incredible activists or notable figures who had done really exceptional things with their lives. At the time, he had no idea that UUs had people of this caliber. And so often, you know, they're modest and they're not broadcasting what they've accomplished. And so sadly, with the passing of so many UU elders, we're not just losing the unique skill sets and knowledge they possess, but at times we're not even aware until we attend their funerals and learn about their extraordinary lives.
These older UUs are a treasure trove of knowledge. It's a shame we don't know more about them.
I agree, which is why I want to introduce everyone to Jim Sands and Ellen Papenberg from the Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice, CUSJ for short, who are great examples of the types of UU elders Peter is talking about.
I was just a social action person in Toronto who was interested in what CUSJ is doing, and I showed up at the annual meeting in Ottawa with the CUC because we always had our meetings together with the CUC annual meeting, and I dreaded getting involved because it was such a lot of work that people were doing. And so I just said, I'll be on the board, but I'll be member at large in Ontario and I'll try to get people involved from Ontario. And I thought, oh, it's a nice and easy thing to do, and I'll just be in my local social action group. We organized different things, and one of the things we did was we set up our bean project in southern Ontario, where we collected money from the different churches, and we went and bought beans from the farmers. The farmers said, that's a great idea, and they doubled our donation, and we donated these to the food bank. At one time, we donated 73,000 pounds of beans to the Daily Bread Food Bank in Toronto, and these were distributed, of course, and beans became the number one item that people were asking for after peanut butter.
And their skills matched their passion.
We also got involved with draft dodgers and deserters from the United States at the time. And we were keeping, you know,
Vietnam War.
During the Vietnam War. And I raised $75,000 for getting these kids from the States into Canada. this business of raising money. It was absolutely no real big effort on our behalf to raise another $30,000 for this group of five people that we sponsored in Kitchener. 30 grand we raised to pay for education for one of the girls to learn her English so she can go on and get engineering school. It's amazing that we can do this. We know our connections. We know who to talk to.
Like many other UUs, they're aging and are finding themselves in difficult positions. They told me about their recent process to decide whether to fold or continue after being active for 25 years.
We came to a situation where the board was all aging like we are. We're the youngest. Ellen's the youngest, I guess. I'm 82 and she's 70. And so we had a whole competition as to whether we were going to survive or not as a group. And five of us got together out of the board of eight and said, we don't believe we should shut down. But in the meantime, the president and the secretary and the main people involved decided that they wanted to close it up and make an orderly funeral, if you want to call it that. And we said no, but then we had to have an all-members meeting that we decided we're not going to shut down because we had 50% that said yes and 50% said no. But in order to change the constitution, said we had to have 66%.
But it was not a real win because half of the people thought we should shut down. It's a difficult situation to be in. Lack of volunteerism is everywhere, and we are certainly noticing that it is very hard to get people on the board. And we had the five, we have now seven, so we do have, but everybody is older than me, so that says it all, and it is a bit of a problem. We are looking to youth places to see if we can get more young adults interested, but it is a little bit of struggle. And what we do is for social action across the country that is basically based on the Unitarian principles of looking out for different viewpoints and social action especially.
So we decided to continue on.
This puts CUSJ in a sort of liminal state where they have funds to carry on their work for a few more years while they decide how to end or transition their work.
I imagine it would be difficult to let go of that kind of personal investment.
Absolutely, especially when there isn't anyone to pass the baton to.
One thing that became apparent when we did the ageism forum back in 2022 is that the cultural differences between the way younger and older folks approach UUism has created a huge gap that makes transitioning into congregational life challenging for young adults. So much so that often young adults decide not to transition at all, which is a huge contributor to the declining membership stories we keep hearing. We wanted to explore the young adult cultural expressions more deeply to get a better understanding of what might bridge that gap. And by culture, we mean the way people interact with each other, including and not limited to how people communicate, create meaning, make decisions, resolve disagreements, approach change, and demonstrate respect. Culture is a co-created phenomenon, meaning people create it together, and it occurs whether it's designed intentionally or left to default, and there's no one way to do it. Of course, there may be people in groups that do not align strictly with one culture or the other, but we feel examining these trends may help us make intentional decisions moving forward.
So let's switch gears for a moment then and look at our youth and young adult culture. Over these past months, I've had the opportunity to speak with nine young adults, including Reverend Danny Weber and Casey Stainsby, who at the time of their interview provided leadership to the youth and young adult programs run by the Canadian Unitarian Council. Both Danny and Casey were raised UUs, have been religious educators, OWL sexuality education facilitators, and are now in ministry with Casey, studying to become a minister at the Vancouver School of Theology, and Reverend Danny serving as a minister at First Unitarian Church of Hamilton.
I think the first thing I want to say, just kind of as like a blanket context disclaimer, is that youth and young adults are not a monolith, right?
That's Casey.
There's a lot of diversity within these age groups. It's something that I've fallen into the trap of speaking on behalf of all youth and young adults before and have been lovingly and firmly called back in to say, hey, hang on. We don't all fit all of these descriptions all the time. Youth and young adults are all individuals. They all have different stories, different experiences, looking for different things. And you're going to hear a lot of different perspectives from these communities. With that, I will speak in like two patterns that I notice, themes that come up. The kinds of things that I really see young people looking for in these spaces is relationship. The biggest overarching thing that really is like the draw and the reward that comes from that kind of space. And I think that really kind of tracks developmentally too around life stages that we know teenagers especially are very, very motivated by peer relationships, peer groups. And that's a really important piece. What everything revolves around is building community, getting to know each other in ways that are more authentic, deeper, more free than in a lot of the other cultural spaces that we find ourselves in. There's a big emphasis on being yourself and being loved for exactly who you are, which is a big part of the embodied experience of UUism that gets absorbed from those experiences is the as you are is exactly perfect and whole and good and holy. And with that, there's also often threads of leadership development. So with that sense, also a sense of you are capable. You can do the things that you want to do to create the world that you want to create, starting with this community. How do we want this community to be and look and feel? And let's all be a part of creating that together. And a real embodied felt sense of spirituality within that as well. So co-creating ritual and worship together, which is in a very participatory, experimental kind of way, where it's never the same twice and is very much about being in and creating a ritual experience together.
I really wanted to understand more clearly what makes UU young adult culture different from older adult culture. Reverend Danny explained that it isn't just about what people do while together, but the ways and the durations these gatherings happen.
When we talk about the difference between youth and young adult culture versus older adult culture, what I've started to tease apart or attempted to understand is what is that distinction and how do we explain it to people? And what I've come up with is that we're actually talking about two different styles of gathering. I think that what's been lifted up and highlighted the most when we talk about youth and young adult culture over the last year, year and a half, is the weekend conference style culture that is created at the national level versus the culture that is created within a congregation on a week-to-week basis. Often these gatherings, either a conference, leadership training, camp style conference, are often an experience of a utopic community. This idea of we are going to create our own rules. We are going to practice those rules and live into them for this entire weekend. And there will be relationships that last longer than that, but the actual structure and space of the gathering is not going to last longer than the 72 hours. So how do we distinguish or capture some of that on a week-to-week basis? And no matter how hard you try or practice, it doesn't really last much longer than that event.
The intense yet brief nature of these gatherings is an important distinction to keep in mind. What we don't want to do is idealize young adult culture or prematurely deem it as the way of the UU future. Reverend Danny explains.
That's one of the things that I've been feeling a little bit uncertain about is like, how do you talk about these two different cultures as one being the way of the future, I suppose, and one being like the thing that's dying, but they're two completely different event or practices or community building styles. And so while the way that we talk about youth and young adult culture is very precious and different than the culture that is created in a congregational space, it's also temporary and can be challenging to create longer term. That's part of the distinction that DC might have been alluding to. One of the pieces that we have talked about in the past is this idea of collaborative versus performative community building. And that is very relevant in weekly or monthly gatherings that you would see in congregations for youth and young adults. This idea that we are coming together to create a thing and worship is going to look different than having somebody sitting at the front preaching.
As a minister who's served in several congregations, Danny is uniquely positioned to reflect on the gap that still exists between the way that young adults are looking to engage and what congregations are considering more collaborative practices.
Ministers have done their best to create more collaborative style worship services by having multiple voices at the front of the room every Sunday, having worship associates who are doing more than just a reading or a chalice lighting, but actually participating in a reflection writing. And so that's a step towards being more collaborative, but there is still that one person who's always in charge, it feels as though. Whereas with youth and young adult, it's much more of a who can do it this week, who can do it next week kind of practices.
The way young adults meet definitely enables them to delve into a deep type of relationship building where they can experience being fully celebrated for who they are.
Right. And what they do when they get together, it's co-created. It really promotes the notion of building the type of community one wants to inhabit through the use of covenants. And while they still meet online to connect once or twice a month, these intensive times together seem to facilitate deep relating that carries on even when they're not in person.
So I'm just curious then, what's the difference between a young adult-led event and an older adult-led event?
I asked Camellia Jahanshahi that very question. She's a young adult that facilitates Rising Together, the online group for UUs of color, and the young adult events coordinator for the CUC.
It has been pretty fun, and it's really beautiful to see a group of, like, you know, a 19-year-old, a 30-something-year-old, or a few 30-something-year-olds, and then you have people in their 50s and 60s coming in, and you get some really nice nuggets of wisdom and collective brainstorming around these things, like social justice issues and UUism. So it's been really fruitful to have a whole spectrum of ages. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I think that the difference that I bring in, because I am the lead facilitator and organizer of it. And so when I organize these things, I am keeping in mind the trials and tribulations of youth and emerging young adults, which is what we call 18 to, I think, 24 or 25, and then young adults. And so it allows us to put our faith into action. I don't want to say this rudely, but in more traditional congregational settings with older leads, often from my experience, the UU factors kind of stayed within the church space. But when young adults lead, we're keeping in mind our work and our friends and our relationships, and we talk about those things more actively. And maybe that's also just because we are a very small group, and so we get to know each other personally. But there just seems to be a little bit more free-form sharing and relating of our morals and our values and our principles and how they actually interact with our day-to-day lives. You know, we're doing things like talking about how we problem solve based on our values with our roommates, and like how we choose our jobs and go through these professional changes, keeping our values in mind and what that looks like as we navigate talking about money or dealing with inappropriate coworkers or all those things that I don't see as often in adult-adult spaces. That's really a young adult conversation, that it is a beautiful thing to have the influence and perspectives of adult-adults and youth in that way. So I think young adults do tend to breathe a new life into these conversations that allows us to practice our values tangibly and like really problem solve what that looks like in our day to day. Maybe that's just ego talking, but that's what I think.
There it is again, that deep relationship centered focus.
Yes, it's a common theme that has emerged for sure. In interviewing Alara Stefaniak-Gade and Zed Brimacombe of Loving Justice, an abolitionist group of UUs, I heard once again how relationships are foundational within their social justice movement. For those new to the concept of prison abolitionism, it has been defined as a political vision with the goal of eliminating imprisonment, policing, and surveillance, and creating lasting alternatives to punishment and imprisonment. This is Zed explaining why Loving Justice got started.
Loving Justice is a group of UUs. We initially connected following the killing of our community member, who was known by several names, Danny Cooper, Mikan, or DC. And as a lot of folks know, Mikan was killed by police in North Vancouver in November of 2022. We got together following their death because we were seeking a response to that death that held space both for the intersectional forms of violence that they faced during their life and in death, and also to advance the politics that they advocated for throughout their life, which were specifically abolitionist politics. So we came together around a shared interest in the politics of abolitionism and in advancing conversations about the role of police in society, especially within our UU communities, and trying to figure out how to respond as a community, both to this specific loss and then to these broader systems of power that Maiken was really involved in naming and fighting and also was really impacted by during their life. There's a lot of grief.
Okay, this is political, but this is also deeply, deeply personal.
It is. And in this case, UU values, deep relating, and activism are braided together so closely that they are really inseparable.
Initially, when the first group of folks came together, it was really partially just to grieve together and then to feel that we needed to mobilize that grief into some kind of action because we really felt that that's what DC would have wanted. So we're trying to hold their memory very much in the work of what we're doing, even though not everyone who's involved was like very close to them. But the majority of us who are currently involved had some relationship with them during their life. So they are very much a part of the work that we're doing.
And maybe I'll actually just speak as somebody who didn't know Maiken. I got invited in by one of my friends who's in the group, and I'm attracted to it because of the politics of it. So I'm aware of the memory of Maiken being a big piece of the central reason why it formed. And my involvement isn't as connected to that piece because I didn't know this human. So I think that a big piece that collectively we've been talking about in the last few months is actually how central we want to keep Maiken as a focus of the group, and also like what is the vision for the group and how do we want to call people in and how do we want to involve the greater community. So right now we've been working on visioning, and a lot of the conversations have been about visioning the world and what it would look like without policing prisons and incarceral systems. And there's this very critical piece of being politicized.
One thing we've been discussing in our visioning is an idea of transforming our UU communities into spaces for abolitionist organizing and educating both ourselves and our networks about abolition, and also working with UUist theology and this broader spiritual framework to merge that with this sort of political stance and work that needs to be done, and overall to build capacity and community for things like mutual aid or non-carceral responses to harm. We've talked about how to do that work through education and community building. And at the moment, there's a lot of interest in, I would say, the ideology, something we're also quite interested in, or the theology. We all share this view of UU theology as fundamentally compatible with abolitionist theory. And so we want to make that more explicit and overt and share those observations and views and use them to mobilize people towards political action.
Okay, so the death of Danny Cooper, who was an active UU young adult, has inspired the creation of the social justice group. To them, prison abolitionism is not just a philosophy to be dealt with at arm's length, but systemic change that they intend to enact because they have been rocked to their core. It's become too personal to be at arm's length.
Right. And even when I spoke with them, the emotions were very close to the surface.
Kind of like how UU activists in the 70s and 80s were providing space for groups like Greenpeace to get their start, or helping with the AIDS epidemic. It was personal and political. Are Loving Justice and Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice connected in any way?
Well, it seems that both groups know of each other, but at the time of this interview, they had not interacted. I asked Zed and Alara about the demographics of their group and their hopes for the future.
We would actually love to be more intergenerational. Right now, it just so happens that everybody in our group is either a young adult or a very recently young adult. And so as such, we feel like the structure of our group is kind of within the framework of UU young adult culture, but that's more a result of who is currently a part of the group.
I was curious to understand if there might be opportunity for the younger activists and older activists to work together. So I asked Alara and Zed to describe how their group functions. Here's Alara describing their group culture.
We're non-hierarchical. We don't have a chair. We're individuals who care about the same thing, and when roles are needed, we'll shift into those roles, but nobody holds a role within the group at this point in time. So as far as structure goes, we're quite similar to a lot of the young adult and youth structures. The amount of skill in the room is also a big part of why that's a factor, because we all have the capability of taking on those roles when it's needed.
And most, if not all of us, came up in some way through UU youth organizing and or young adult organizing. So we do have a lot of those skills as well. And I think to some extent where we're at right now is developing ourselves almost as a team and working together. And as we continue to bring more folks in, maybe it'll make sense to formalize roles more or to have standing committees. But for the moment, we've been assigning and delegating and taking up work as it needs to be done, basically.
Having been deeply involved in young adult UU culture myself, I can recognize how those principles are being brought to life in this activist culture. And it's very different from the way that older UUs operate. It might not be different from how they used to operate, but I have to admit, as time moves on, I do things in a more, I don't know how to say this, like adult way. I'm not sure if that's like a part of growing up or if it's a matter of exposure to the traditional way of operating.
So you're correct. There is a cultural difference here. While the young adults are working in a less formal, non-hierarchical way, the older adults are operating in more of a roles-based way that fits the expectations of a registered not-for-profit organization. It became apparent to me upon hearing this that succession planning wouldn't be as simple as the older activists handing over the reins of CUSJ to the younger activists, because young adults do not necessarily want to operate within that type of structure. In fact, they said they enjoy the freedom that not having that structure gives them. So that said, Jim and Ellen and Alara and Zed showed a genuine interest in meeting each other. The next two young adults I spoke with, Brenna Rappaport and Maya Ferguson-Klanowski, were raised UUs. They're active leaders in the young adult national movement and imagine a future where they're involved in some version of congregations at a local level. Brenna leads Gathered Here, a monthly online meetup specifically for young adults. Something that was really interesting in speaking with them is that they engage in the national young adult community and also in their local UU community. So they've learned both the young adult culture and the older adult culture, and they speak with fondness about both of these. Brenna explains the difference between the young adult culture and the congregational culture she participates in and loves.
My experience with participating in UU youth and young adult culture has had quite a few things in common. It is a much more open and collaborative process to existing in community with people with whom you have shared values that tends to thrive in more unstructured ways that allow people to focus on connecting to each other in ways that are often not as formalized as, for example, a Sunday service or a more congregational approach to UU.
They explained to me how and why covenanting is a critical part of their culture.
The young adult community is also very based off of covenant, and we revisit it a lot. It's a good way of us connecting on our shared values. And then also, as Brenna was saying, with like the sort of unstructured nature of some of our conversation, it allows us to connect on a really deep level and explore our values with our personal lives really ingrained into that.
For myself and folks who grew up UU, I think that the UU principles are definitely one part of an understanding of what makes us UU and what separates our community as UU from a non-UU community that might otherwise be quite similar. The principles are not the only shared values or ideas that come to form that identity. As mentioned, so the covenanting process often has similar things brought up time and time again when different covenants are made in different gatherings. And I think that forms its own sense of what our shared values are, that's more co-created rather than being agreed upon ahead of time. But the principles and things that come from the broader UU culture, from the CUC, from UUA, that definitely is part of a larger spectrum of shared ideas we bring to each other.
My experience of covenanting is that it's helpful when a group of people are coming together to do something that isn't predetermined, scripted, or predictable.
And like Maya said, it is what anchors the sense of shared identity and purpose for them.
Exactly. It puts the UU values into the forefront. And if you have people joining in a UU event for the first time, it's a good tool that tells them where they have arrived and what is expected now that they're there.
I asked Brenna how new people are arriving at young adult events these days, who they are, and what draws them there.
Mostly folks who, for example, their parents are members of a congregation and they attend their youth group at the congregation. the young adult culture tends to be much more separate from congregations, but often it might be somebody who grew up UU and then moved to a place that doesn't have a congregation or who doesn't have time on Sundays to go to service. But not entirely. Some people do come to the UU YA community who weren't raised UU. So there's sort of that two different paths to coming to that community. But it's definitely less tied to congregations compared to the youth culture. And I would say that a lot of UU young adults are not members of a congregation.
Yeah, I agree. I see that combination of different paths towards the YA groups.
So Maya explained why she felt it was so important to have a space for young adult people to meet because their challenges in life are very unique at this stage.
There is something particular that people seek out around being with a community of people around a similar age. I think that's really valuable. Young adults are often in various types and stages and phases of transition and are not settled into the type of life and routine that a much older person might fit going to church every Sunday into a regular part of their life because they know where they'll be living 5 years from now and what they'll be doing and who they'll be with. And that is a lot less true for many young adults. And so that sort of transition and temporality, I think, draws people together in less frequent or online ways and spaces to share in that uncertainty together and that sense of shared points along the trajectory of life experience that might not be reflected in going to a congregation and not seeing other folks your age or not being led by younger people.
This online community of young adults has been coming together almost every month now for years and get to see each other in person a couple times a year, resulting in really good friendships that they cherish. I was inspired by Maya and Brenna's hope that the UU community will find a way to bridge the gap between the young adult culture and the older adult culture so that the momentum can keep growing. Here's Brenna again.
It's this really strong community that's been birthed. To me, that's a sign of people are interested in taking on this community and getting involved somewhere along the way that will lead to, it might look different in 20 or 30 years, but I do think having a strong young adult community as it's being created now, that we can find a way of bridging that gap and figuring out how to keep that going as people get older, because it's a really exciting time now. And I certainly would not be as involved in UU as I am if it wasn't for Gathered Here and sort of this gradual growth of the online young adult community. And it's really brought me, not exactly brought me back to UU, but made me much more involved. And certainly the folks that I see regularly online and a couple times a year in person made them much more involved. I feel very hopeful that there are people who really care about this and want to see that grow and evolve and connect with the broader UU community.
Yeah, it's so inspiring to know these young adults are actively co-creating something that they are excited to be a part of.
It is. And it's so interesting that many of those in leadership positions have come to it from within UU traditions and come stacked with skills and credentials that truly reflect the ideals that so many directors of religious education and youth leaders have been speaking about all along. And in the case of Brenna and Maya, they both said that if they were to engage in congregational culture in a significant way, that they would need to have a leadership role of some sort.
I would say that's true for me too, having joined as a youngish adult. Like I was 22 at the time and taking on different positions in different congregations. And like eventually I was offered more and more leadership roles with the CUC and now look.
Casey Stainsby highlighted a difference that I wasn't aware of between young adults who have grown up UU and those who come to UUism later in life. As someone born and raised within UUism, she speaks from personal experience and years of observation.
There is often like an embodied sense of what this faith feels like that's beyond just the ideas. And critically too, those folks won't have a different religious experience prior to UUism. Whereas a lot of people who come to it a bit later in life, and again, not everybody, but a lot of people who do, there's a pattern here, may have prior religious experience where they've rejected something, they've walked away from something that wasn't serving them. And so there can be more of a tendency to say, I'm here because I don't want that. And I think raised UUs especially have this gift saying, but this is what this is. We're not necessarily here to reject something. We're here to embrace something and to live into something. And those things can be fluid and interact in the same person. And it's complex. But I think that's one of the strengths that we can bring from this community as a whole. And also just a sense of experimentation, being okay with trying something out, not being super attached to it, being the thing forever, see if it works or not. If it doesn't, fine, let it go, move on, try something else. And a sense of, let's just try it. Let's not strike 20 committees to see if it's feasible. Let's just do the thing and see if it works. That's a spirit that I really enjoy.
Wow. Casey really captured the essence of how young adult spaces are all about living into what will happen.
Brenna referred to this as co-creating and explains how she uses this follow the relational flow approach when leading Gathered Here, which typically averages about 10 people each month.
The nature of having these very co-created spaces and communities, a lot of it is just let's start something and see what happens. Gathered Here was let's start this monthly gathering and see who shows up. And I know when it started, there was not a sense that it would go on and become a multi-year ongoing project. And the monthly leadership of it got passed off to folks like Maya and myself, who are just participants who were brought up to help holding the space and hosting the gathering. So the fact of it becoming something that people wanted to keep going and that we're able to continue doing. So a lot of things are just we'll start something or we'll change something and we'll see what happens. And I think that the future of what congregations look like is slowly sort of going along the same lines of maybe we'll make a change and we'll see what happens and if it works for people or it doesn't.
At first glance, it appears that young adults are functioning in their own peer-led bubble without much interaction from older UU adults. But then Brenna and Maya reminded me that this isn't totally the case.
One thing that I really appreciate with Gathered Here is that it's connected to the young adult pastoral care team that's supported by the CUC. So every month there's a young adult like Maya or myself hosting and a pastoral care team minister co-hosting. For me, it's been a cool opportunity to get to work with some ministers across Canada and co-host the gathering together. And it does also help to connect young adults to ministers, bringing some of that UU ministerial role back into that. And I think that Gathered Here would not be what it is if we didn't have those ministers with us. In that space, it's not ministers taking on a strong leadership role. It's generally the young adult co-host who is planning the gathering, and the minister will do an opening reading and facilitate joys and sorrows and be there as a co-facilitator, but not in charge of the gathering.
Now seems like a good time to introduce an analogy we've been using to describe the differences between young adult culture and congregational culture. Erin, do you want to describe it for us?
Sure. So what we've been likening congregational culture to is a classical Shakespearean production where you have the roles there that people play and the props and the costumes, and it's all fine-tuned and beautiful. And if someone can't do a particular role, then someone else replaces them and the show goes on. The play itself, well-refined, and it's been around a long time, so it's polished and people love the experience. The ones who do it often especially love the experience of creating that together. On the other hand, we have the young adult culture that is something more like a contemporary theater production, where the participants themselves create stories and productions that reflect who they are, and the characters are often customized to suit the lives, the stories, and what they bring, right? The play itself is customized to whoever the people are that are bringing those characters to life. It may not be as polished, and it may not even be repeated over and over again to become polished. But that's not the point. It's the act of coming together to co-create that provides intimacy, vibrance, and a sense of purpose.
And it wasn't always like that. There was a time when congregations were functioning more or less intergenerationally with a single culture. But recognizing the decline in membership a number of years back, the CUC began investing specifically in youth and young adult programming. The investment worked, except now the youth and young adults who grew up expressing UUism their own way don't necessarily want to experience the culture shock of bridging into congregational expressions. I mean, some do happily, but at the same time, resoundingly, we hear people say that they miss what they grew up in.
Now, just as Casey cautioned us early on, we need to remember that not all youth and younger adults are the same. I would like to remind listeners now that not all older adults are the same, nor is every congregation. There can be adults who would say, I would love to do things in a more co-creative or experimental way, just as there may be young adults that say, I prefer to engage in classical UUism over that co-creative young adult approach. So additionally, there may be congregations that have integrated co-creative approaches into their ways of doing things in various degrees.
Exactly. We're talking about trends here while recognizing that things are not necessarily all one thing or the other.
I described the trend to Maya and Brenna, and they added more nuance to it from their perspective.
When I was growing up in my congregation as a kid and a youth, I was fairly engaged with my congregation in relatively co-creative ways. The congregation that I grew up in, my parents chose it because it had a bit less of a the performance wasn't the same every week, and there was more room for participation and different opportunities. So that's always been part of my experience in UU. And personally, the idea of this binary between a co-creative and a performance, I don't know, that metaphor, I think it's a good representation of how that difference can be very stark. I don't think it necessarily always is so completely different from each other. But personally, I would have to have some kind of role in a congregation as a member in the future. And I think not having space to have that role can be a place where people don't feel super welcome. But I don't know. What do you think, Maya?
Yeah, I mean, hearing that, like the performative and the co-creative that you mentioned, it really, I feel like, articulates something that I haven't been able to articulate very well at all, because I've been really in and out of both like the congregational and the YA communities at different times. And I don't know, there's a lot of room in the congregational setting for there to be more co-creation that I think most of the congregants would be very, very happy about seeing. But it's just like a translation issue at certain points. Like a young adult might come into this space and have something that's not quite perfect to present to everybody else, or that's not quite perfect to talk about with someone else, that doesn't look the way that the other congregants might want it to look like, but it's their way of expressing and it's perfectly great. I guess like getting those communications across in a way that can be co-creative for both people and not shutting anybody out is a really good way of moving forward.
Just to add on to that, I see some congregations, and this might be getting a little outside the scope of what we're talking about, but some congregations experimenting with non-traditional formats and times and approaches of doing services. The congregation I grew up in, that my parents are still members of and very involved with, they're experimenting with, I think they're going to do a monthly evening service that focuses on different sort of requested themes, and then is going to be followed by a particular type of dancing that I don't remember what it's called, but so the service is going to lead into this dance, and it's this new format that they're going to be experimenting with to, based on a sense of, I think they tried it once and a bunch of people from the community showed up who aren't UU, and they got excited about the possibility of new people coming in. So this idea of experimenting and trying new approaches, I think that there is a sense now in the broader UU community that that needs to be happening, and that getting new people in does mean trying different things and seeing if different things might work. And I think that that is very much in the spirit of the way that the UU youth and young adult spaces are continuously built and rebuilt as people age out and new people come in and take on leadership roles, and it evolves over time.
Right. We can't say there is no creativity or willingness to try new things within congregations, but we can use the theater metaphor as a way to understand where an expression may land on the spectrum.
I agree. And Brenna touched on something that could explain another interesting phenomenon around membership.
I've definitely been thinking about the question a lot of this sort of lifespan of a UU and when people come into UU and when they leave it or stop participating actively in different ways. I've been a UU all my life. And when I was young, I had RE or lifespan learning programs that had lots of other kids being raised UU in my home congregation. And when I became a youth, we started going to youth conferences and seeing all these other young people being raised UU in their youth groups. And yet there's this thing that happens where most active UU congregants were not raised UU, and most people who are raised UU do not become active congregants in their adult lives. So it's this odd thing of, I think often other religious communities, people raise their children and the children go on to be the adults that raise their children. And of course, there's always expansion and conversion and recruitment and whatever. But there's something about this raised UU identity that doesn't necessitate active participation in order for people to still hold it very strongly. I have friends who consider themselves really lifelong hardcore UUs that have maybe been to one service in the last 5 years, you know, and don't participate in any UU activities, but absolutely identify as UU.
Right. There's a difference between actively co-creating a faith community and simply identifying as a UU. The first is a collective experience, the other an individual one. And it brings to mind the 2021 Canadian census numbers where 10,930 respondents identified as Unitarian Universalists, which is a much higher number than the 4,033 people actively involved in congregations in 2021.
Yeah, so where are these other 6,000 or so UUs if they're not in our congregations? And what's happening to them that they decide that it isn't essential for them to engage in UU community in order to be Unitarian Universalists?
Well, for starters, the CUC was set up to serve congregations, and the way it structures membership means that only voting members of a congregation are included in the official numbers. So there are currently groups of active UUs who are not considered members because they're not affiliated with a congregation or a fellowship. So this means that there are lots of UUs not being counted and not engaging as voting members. For instance, young adults, the staff at the CUC, Unicamp, members of Soulful Singing, folks creating UU social enterprises, and even ministers who work for the CUC. Even myself, since I moved away from my home congregation almost a decade ago.
So that's a good number that are right here in our midst that are not being recognized. This doesn't even get into the challenge of understanding the engagement patterns of younger UU adults.
I'm very curious to know what's happening with these young people once they age out of the young adult program at 35 years old.
Well, there's lots to be explored here. So back when UUs like Peter Scales were growing up, they did leadership training as young adults and then happily joined congregations. There just isn't the same reliable influx of younger people joining congregations these days, though.
When we were doing the inclusivity forum on ageism, I remember one of the young adults involved said they didn't feel it was accurate to say they bridge into congregations, that it felt more like falling off the cliff and into the abyss, because there's such a cultural and relational disconnect. So they're part of a vibrant national community one day, and then the next they aren't.
The culture gap between what they're used to and what the congregation is offering is just too big, particularly for those who have not built up relationships within the local congregations over time. The jarring transition has been stressful for people. Here's Brenna explaining how she feels.
I'm entering into this like really strong community and getting really excited about it and really happy to be a part of it. And frankly, it's kind of concerning to me, like all of my friends who are 35 and aging out, it makes me feel upset. Like I don't want to have them stop being part of that community. It makes sense to at some point have an age out, but I don't know whether that being like a hard deadline is so helpful for us.
I remember that feeling when I aged out. It was actually quite upsetting. So I spent years building these relationships, and then I was suddenly told I wasn't allowed to be involved anymore. And like I found other ways to be involved through my work with the CUC and engagement with some local congregations from time to time. But there is a lot of grief in losing my connection to this vibrant spiritual community, I have to say.
And from what we've been hearing, you're definitely not alone in this.
It's interesting that we continue to call someone who is 35 years old a young adult when they oftentimes have careers and relationships and children, house, family.
I agree. We're calling a 35-year-old a young adult when a 35-year-old is a legitimate adult by all social standards. And then referring to congregants as adults as though they reflect all the age ranges when actually they're predominantly seniors.
Yeah, I wonder if this misnaming has impacted the growth of UUism in Canada.
I can't be sure, but what we can see is that there is definitely a missing middle demographic within UUism. And I can't help but wonder, when we call a 35-year-old a young adult, you know, it's possible that their way of expressing UUism may be considered something kind of other than the norm. Mm-hmm. So instead of being embraced and allowed to shape the collective culture, they remain in sort of this young adult container. And even though they're adults, they are not centered as the future leaders of UUism.
Okay, and so when we call seniors adults, we center their expression, and perhaps that group might be better considered an affinity group. In other denominations where there's a more robust multi-generational dynamic, don't 30 to 60-year-olds take on the larger part of the leadership roles? I imagine that missing middle shapes the current congregational expression as time moves on.
So it's possible, and it's certainly something that our collective movement would benefit from pondering. And while these findings during these interviews are not meant to declare what is true and what is not, our hope is that raising these questions will result in people talking and hopefully gaining some clarity about what's happening.
And there has already been some conversation around this issue, not just in what the age range should be, but also what the transition should look like and how they should interact. Casey Stainsby and Reverend Danny Weber recently hosted conversations with the youth and young adult community about the age limit conundrum. They shared their findings with us, and we've linked those findings in the show notes.
And there's a lot to be factored in here. This is Casey's reflecting on some of the considerations that go into a decision about the age range for young adults.
I think it's really important to have caucus spaces for our communities, especially the folks who are less represented in the majority culture. Young adults are one of those groups. And so I think it's really important to have spaces that are protected for them to be together. And blowing up the top end of that age range would potentially remove that option. Maybe there's a both and solution that we can explore. I would really love to see more fluidity, I think, between these two cultures. And I think that that's one place where that can happen, is have events that are young adult led. Young adult culture style events that are open to all ages. I would love to see more of that. I don't think that means not having young adult only spaces as well.
This is a good point. Maybe we shouldn't be so rigid about our approach to defining age ranges. There's a world of opportunity if we allow for these two cultures to intermingle.
Intermingling and interacting with intention is something that Reverend Ann Barker and Reverend Linda Thompson, the Congregational Life Leads for the CUC, further challenge us to think about. They recommend becoming more fluid in our thinking and our policies around age. We'll start with Anne.
I wonder if we're actually asking the right question. I think we have artificial borders and boundaries around ages. When we're trying to think about how services have been delivered for different age groups, that also can be related to the capacity in your congregation to connect with services and the location you're in. There has been surges of young adults joining and coming. Mm-hmm. The thing that worries me is when we divide people into groups. And I think caucus groups are really important, right? Like, I need time with the ministers to be able to tell a story and know that the people understand what I'm talking about without explaining it. Our BIPOC folks need caucus groups to be able to be renewing and reassuring to one another. We need people who get us. Youth need youth, and mm-hmm. we need them connected. And we want them connected. Same with young adults. Although when you look at our young adult numbers, is it like 18 to 35? When I was 35, I had two kids elementary school age.
Ditto.
Right?
And I joined at 28 and they were, you know, I had two kids already.
Right? And I know 35-year-olds who are single and still trying to find their way in the world. So this range of humans from 18 to 35, it's a magic imaginary number. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we program only in the groups. Because when you hit 35, you're not connected to anything else.
Yes.
And I don't want to see our people who found vital relationships in a young adult community disappear when they turn 36. That's pretend numbering, right? We need to find ways as a movement to figure out how to not be held in containers that cut somebody off at some point. The idea that when you turn 36, you're now hanging out in the congregation and not in this other kind of gathering with your friends, it's ridiculous.
Healthy communities are the ones that involve the 10-year-olds and the 15-year-olds and the 21-year-olds and the 28-year-olds and the 35-year-olds into the life of the congregation, and also give them a place to hang out sometimes with their own people. If they don't do both, then we've done those people a disservice, because they don't know how to be part of a congregation. And they reach 36 and they go, well, this doesn't work for me. We need to do both. I really think we've done some of our young people a grave harm, because we've emphasized too much programming that is for them at the expense of building multi-generational, intergenerational communities. I am so glad we have online opportunities for youth and young adults, because some of them don't find that cohort in their home congregations, or at least not in a critical mass kind of number. And a lot of young adults leave their home communities and end up elsewhere for education or work. And so it's a way for them to remain connected. I think one of the things we need to do is challenge our communities' assumption that they don't need to take care of young people. And that's not universally in all of our congregations and communities, but some of them go, well, we don't have to have a youth group because they've got this online thing, or we can only have a youth group, and so we don't need to figure out how to talk to those kids or whatever it is. So I think one of our challenges is to really start a conversation about what it means to be a community of all ages. And it feels so precious to me that we're one of the remaining institutions in society that can be that. People used to have lots and lots of extended family around, or there were other groups. For a lot of people, that's not real anymore. So how do young people get to know old people? And how do old people get... I did an address a while ago, Anne read it. And the statistic was, if you ask people over 65, have they had a meaningful conversation with anyone under 35 in the, I forget the time frame, last 6 months? It was a very small percentage. And when you took out people they were related to, it went down to like 10%. And congregations can be an antidote to that isolation and that siloing of ages. And I think we need to really lift that up as missional for our communities.
So we know that there are two cultures, two expressions being cultivated in tandem and parallel to one another. And we know there is no clear strategy that will allow either group to flourish sustainably in the near future. It would be, to me, a great loss if our movement wasn't able to bridge this gap. The stakes feel really high.
And the stakes are high. We're being challenged to think and stretch in ways that might make us uncomfortable. But you know what they say about that comfort zone, right? There are young adults who yearn for rites of passage, guidance, and real deep relationship with UU elders. They don't necessarily want to show up and play a role in the production that is the congregational Sunday service, but they don't want to be separate either. And then we know that there are also older adults who've told us that they would love to be involved in a co-creative approach. However, they can't participate because the current ways do not allow, say, you know, a 55-year-old to join. It's prohibited.
You know, I just want to take a cue from the young adults in that it's also totally okay to experiment. We could lift the age restriction. We could allow folks of any age to participate in the young adult culture. We could host young adult style gatherings. We could give space for young adults to meet together. We could try to make our existing congregations more young adult welcoming. Heck, we could create something new entirely. You know, we could just try and see how it goes, like throwing spaghetti on the wall and seeing what sticks.
And, you know, perhaps it's a bit of all of that. I strongly urge anyone who is invested in cultivating intergenerational communities to check out the report that we've linked in the show notes. You'll be able to read firsthand how young adults experience UUism right now.
You know, I'm really glad that we took some time to learn about the two cultures, but it's also important to understand the barriers they face to fully embracing one another. What we do know is our ways of doing things now seem to create some obstacles to engaging. I'm interested to see how we might use that sense of fluidity to live our way into solutions.
Well, you're in luck because in our upcoming episode, we'll hear from people who are exploring how to consciously and proactively address this culture gap.
À la prochaine!